For Discovery News, I'm Will Johnson, and Friday has thankfully rolled around again, and so it's time for the Friday News Feedback, which we do every Friday here on Discovery News. I'm joined by Discovery News reporters James Williams and Jorge Ribas. Guys, thanks for being here once again.
Thank you, Will.
How's it going, Will?
And Jorge is in the studio today, James on the phone, so sort of a weird dynamic we have going on, wouldn't you say?
It's weird.
It will not hopefully affect the outcome of the stories. Real quickly for any new listeners, what we do every Friday is James brings us his three favorite stories of the week. Jorge does the same, and we basically choose our favorite story, and whoever brings us that story will win. Currently, Jorge's stories have been chosen 8 or 9 times, is that right, Jorge?
It's 9 times.
9 times, and James, you've had 4 wins, correct?
Yeah, but I just want to say, I know I probably sound bitter, but I'm not bitter.
Okay, good. All right. And we should introduce our guest judge who will actually choose the best story of the week, which is based on nothing other than his opinion and feeling and whims and maybe his mood today. It's Rob Levy here who works at Discovery. As always, we have people here who are from the building. Rob, thanks for coming in.
Hey, Will. It's good to be here.
So tell us about what you do real quick.
I don't really know what I do here, Will. I've been here for so long. I come in the morning. I turn on the lights. I mostly work on new media projects. So if it's not on television, if it's on mobile phones, if it's online, I probably worked on it.
Okay, let's jump right into this. Jorge, you're here in the studio. Might as well let you start it off this week, if that's all right with James.
Yep, sure.
Okay.
Okay, so I got a new study out of WashU in St. Louis where researchers are trying to figure out why it is that older people might not get the joke as well as younger people. So what they found was doing a study that they called the joke and story completion test. They had a joke, and they had 4 possible endings to the joke. One was the correct humorous ending, one was the humorous non sequitur, one was an unhumorous straightforward answer, and the last was an unhumorous unrelated non sequitur. And what they found is because older adults, our cognitive ability is declined, that ability is what makes humor funny, is what we're able to resolve a conflict between the expected and the actual. And with these cognitive skills diminishing, we're not able to get the joke or to complete the joke even. And that's kind of what they figured out was we're just not, you know, it's actually like a physical process, not really so much just a generational one of why we can't really understand jokes, or as we get older, we can't laugh at jokes as much as we used to.
So does that mean that, like, as we get older, just the world around us is going to be
grimmer,
less humorous?
Yeah, less humorous, grimmer. So, I mean, it just doesn't look awesome, really.
I'm going to try and laugh as much as I can today.
What they said is that actually, you know, like, they literally said that they're trying to figure this out to help this process so that older people can laugh more, because they say laughter is very important for our physical well-being and our health.
Speaking on behalf of my my great-grandmother, who lived to the ripe old age of 94, she was one of the funniest people I ever knew, so I'm going to assume this is a very preliminary study.
All right, well, let's take it over to James for his first story of the week.
Okay, my first story is out of MIT, and researchers there were looking for a better way to propel submarines, and to do this, they looked to the bluegill sunfish, and it's pretty cool. What they're doing is they want to replace propeller-driven subs with basically a robotic fishtail that I assume would just attach to the back of the sub, and it works just like the fishtail of this bluegill sunfish. And the reason why they chose the bluegill sunfish is because the way it swims is unique in that it has a constant forward thrust with no sort of backward drag. So they're using that. They analyzed 19 components that are critical to achieve this fish's powerful thrust, and they're going to slap that on the back of a sub, and these subs are the sorts of things that they use to look like map the ocean floor, survey shipwrecks, that sort of thing. But they're hoping that the military will be able to use this too for propellerless underwater robots for minesweeping and inspecting harbors and that sorts of thing. So a bluegill sunfish is, you know, it's for homeland security, I guess.
So they're going to basically put a tail, like a fish tail, on the back of a sub rather than a spinning propeller.
Right. Yeah. And they figured out how to make this thing work.
I'm actually surprised they haven't done. I mean, you'd think, like, hey, why don't we model, you know, our underwater craft after like fish, which swim pretty efficiently. Yeah, it's just kind of surprising.
Well, you know, although it kind of makes sense to go with the propeller out of the gate, because I think, when they were trying to design airplanes, they tried to, like, do wings that flap,
that
and that
true.
Didn't work. So
that didn't work so well.
So it's possible that they've been trying this sort of thing, I don't know, before, and then they just got it right. I don't know.
On an unrelated note, or possibly slightly related, I recently got the flying dragonfly from the Discovery Channel store. It flies and flaps its plastic wings.
How is it?
It's kind of cool. I need to learn how to fly it better.
Nice plug, Will.
Yeah, thanks.
Did you get a discount on that?
Yeah.
Anyway. All right. Jorge, let's take it back to Jorge for his second story of the week.
Okay. This one comes out of the University of Houston, where their computational biomedicine lab has developed a piece of software called URXD, and it's a facial recognition software that uses a three-dimensional snapshot of a person's face to create a biometric measure.
Great name, by the way.
What, the URXD?
Yeah.
Yeah, it could have been a little bit snappier, I think. But what they have developed, and I mean, there's facial recognition software out there, but this is according to the to a independent performance benchmark called the Face Recognition Vendor Test. This is the best one on the market and the one that has the most, the most renown, I guess, in the scientific field right now. And they're hoping that they can use it to secure facilities, but also at some point, you know, could be used as, you know, instead of your ID or PIN numbers or remembering, you know, all these, you know, things that we have to remember every day, just walking up to an ATM and it'll read your face and give you money, I guess, which could create a whole host of problems if
you know when that
copy your face.
Yeah, do you know when that wouldn't work?
When's that?
Identical twins.
Oh, there you go.
Have they figured that one out?
Actually, there's no mention of that here, but would stump.
Good point, James. Yeah. All right, let's take it back to James for his second story.
Okay. My second story is about pendulum tits, which are birds that live in Central and Southern Europe. And these are like the players of the bird world. The University of Bath in the UK, they studied these, and they found that during the breeding season, one in three clutches of eggs, which I guess are like their nests, are abandoned because both parents head out of the nest to go mate with other pendulum tits. And they can have up to seven different partners in any one breeding season. And the thing that I thought was funniest, or maybe it's not, I don't know, I guess it's not that funny, maybe it's funny, is that when they laid the eggs, the male pendulum tits would take off most, you know, like half the time, but in some cases the females would actually hide their eggs from the males, so the males wouldn't know, he wouldn't leave before he noticed that how many eggs had been laid. So there's like this total, like, you know, like Hollywood style Jerry Springer romance, you know, catastrophe going on in the trees above Central Europe and Southern Europe.
I'm confused. So wait, they would hide them. So for what reason?
So that like the male birds wouldn't know that like the eggs had been laid. Like basically, the way I read it is that as soon as the eggs get laid, well then somebody's got to take responsibility for these eggs, right? And so the females would hide the eggs from the males, so the males would know that it was responsibility time, so that the females could split before the males found out that they did. Because like when the females take off, then the male has to decide whether or not they're going to stick around and watch the eggs or leave the nest and go find another mate.
That's a really tangled web of deceit.
Does the article say why they do this? Is it just to create more genetic diversity?
No, well, it's unique. It's unique within the bird community. But they do say that it I guess it improves, that even though they're leaving 1/3 of these nests abandoned, which ultimately die, they're so prolific elsewhere that I guess they actually manage to, you know, obviously they manage to keep it up, but I guess it increases their chances that their offspring will take over. But I guess nobody got the memo that at least one male or female has to stick around in order for the species to really, you know.
They're really hopping from nest to nest. I mean, they could have eggs in different places. I don't know how that
works. Yeah, they do.
All right. Jorge, let's take it back to you for your third and final story for the week.
Okay, I got another face story here.
A theme week for you.
Yes, this one comes out of Northwestern University, where researchers are studying how we read people's faces, and we might do it subconsciously. Like, if you see someone who's scared or happy, you know it. But on a subconscious level, we also recognize these expressions, what they call it is micro expressions, which are brief flashes of fear or surprise or anger or whatever that we might have that we don't read, that we don't know we read, but we read them. And they did is they took volunteers to evaluate 70 different faces of surprise. But before they would show the faces of surprise for 30 milliseconds, so you can't even, I don't even think we can register 30 milliseconds, they would show a happy or a fearful expression. And in the survey afterwards, people rated the expressions, and all these faces of surprise were the same. They just had a happy expression or a fearful expression for that minute time beforehand. If they saw a fearful expression, or if they subconsciously saw that, they would rate that surprised face as a negative surprise. And if they had a happy expression beforehand, they would rate that surprised face as a good surprise. And so they just found that by little ticks, you know, it might be like a quick little muscle on your lip or on your brow or your chin might drop. We can read people like that.
So it's like subliminal advertising from the soul.
Right. From the very darkness of your soul.
So does that mean that like if someone comes to visit or whatever and you take like a picture of that 30 millisecond thing, that they would actually be able to tell whether or not you're lying if you're happy to see them?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I don't know if there's a camera that can capture that 30 millisecond, but if you could do that, and then you could use that facial recognition software like I just talked about, you could combine these two to get a reading of whether people are lying to you.
I bet cops could use that too, man.
I believe that actually their micro expressions are being used in law enforcement.
Oh, they should be.
I believe I have heard that.
More importantly, can you combine the two and then use it to help senior citizens get jokes?
Yeah, Judge Rob Levy with a good point.
I'd like to learn how to fake those.
All right, James, you have one final story for the week.
Yes, I do. This one is out of Rutgers in New Jersey, and what they found was that if you, like everyone always talks about how caffeine can be bad for you, but in fact it may be healthy for you in the sense that if you drink caffeine and exercise together, you can, they think that you can prevent skin cancer. And the reason this is that the sun throws all this UVB radiation at us. UVB damages the cell, the DNA in cells. When the cells DNA gets damaged, they do this thing called apoptosis, which is basically cellular suicide. And from the study, they're able to figure out that if exercise in combination with caffeine gets those cells, the damaged DNA cells, which can ultimately lead to cancer, to kill themselves off in greater numbers. They used these hairless mice. They exposed them to UVB light, and then one mouse did nothing. The other mouse drank caffeinated water, which was the equivalent of one or two cups of coffee. The third ran on a wheel, and then the fourth did both. And when they tested them to see what the damage or how many of these cells had killed themselves, they found that compared to the one that they did nothing for, the test mouse, that in the ones that just had caffeine, they had a 95% increase in this apoptosis. The exercisers had 120%, but that those that drank caffeine and exercised had a 400% increase.
Wow. Okay. So a great new team, exercise and caffeine.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sitting here with a big mug of coffee, and I'm going away on vacation in this weekend. So this is the best news I've heard all week.
Does vacation mean exercise for you?
I'm sure there'll be some exercise involved.
All right.
Well, you've got to walk from the hotel to the beach.
The other thing, though, too, like exercise can get you kind of pumped. I mean, caffeine can get you kind of pumped up for exercise, too. So it's like caffeine gets you going, and then it helps you afterwards, maybe.
Yeah. All right. Interesting stuff. Let's review, and then we'll take it to guest judge Rob Levy for his final determination of this Friday News Feedback. We heard from Jorge Ribas. His three stories included the new face of identity protection, talking about how facial recognition software could be useful for credit card numbers, etc. He also told us about how older folks might not get jokes due to a cognitive decline associated with age. And finally, Jorge told us about micro expressions and how reading faces and micro expressions can really affect how we think and feel about certain people's expressions. So, James, we heard about about caffeine and exercise teaming up to prevent skin cancer. Also, some rather bizarre birds who actually abandon their nest and go off philandering about in other nests. And also the MIT team building a robotic fin for submarines. So, Rob, a lot of different topics there for you to think about. And as always, these guys have brought us some great stories. What are your initial thoughts?
Well, these are really great stories. Just off the top of my head, again, reiterating that I had a 94-year-old great-grandmother who was one of the funniest people I ever knew right up to the end. So I'm going to assume that story was pretty a preliminary study. I think that the two stories that stand out the most in my mind is the facial recognition. I got some privacy issues with that. You know, I can't change the fact that the research is being done, but I think since I am the final arbiter of the story of the week, the two that stand out the most in my mind is the caffeine and exercise preventing skin cancer. I think that's really any time you can come up with any way to prevent cancer, that's important. and the fishtail in the submarine. A little secret that, you know, nobody here knows is that I'm an avid scuba diver, and for a while I was considering going into marine science, so that kind of stands out. So I think that...
Well, first of all, this is very exciting because both of those are James stories. So, James, you must be really thrilled right now.
I'm shaking with excitement right now. That's awesome.
Either way, James wins. Go ahead, Rob.
Yeah, cue the sound effects. I think that my favorite story this week was the fishtail on the submarine.
MIT team building robotic fin for submarines. All right, Rob, that's great. James, thoughts?
Oh, thank you so much, Rob. I'm pretty excited to get back up on a horse. I feel a strong comeback coming by. Yeah,
and he picked those stories with me in the studio right here, glaring at him the whole time. So, I mean, that's great. Good job, James. Congratulations.
Thanks, man. Thank you.
Yeah, that's great. So the new score is 9-5. James' stories have been chosen 5 times. Jorge still in the lead with 9, but maybe a turnaround this week. Rob Levy, thanks for being our guest judge. Great judging process.
Hey, it was my pleasure, Will.
And we, of course, are here every Friday with the Friday News feedback throughout the week. Of course, you can get other Discovery News stories with not such a... light spin, you might say. And if you'd like to email us, if you like these stories or have a comment or question or actually have some stories of your own, or even possibly want to be a guest judge on the Friday News feedback, you can do that at pod_cast@discovery.com. Thanks for being here, everyone.
Thank you. Thanks, Rob.
Thanks, Will.
Oh, you're welcome. Thanks, Will.
And for Discovery News, I'm Will Johnson.